Hello and welcome back to another episode of Reliable Talk. Hope everyone's keeping well. My apologies, guys. I've taken a bit of a break. I've been so busy and I really wanted to do this sort of once a week, right? So I'm going to really try to pick up the pace again with this and really try to make that possible for you guys, because I know there's a lot of people been asking me, when's the next podcast coming out? What are you going to be talking about? And I really do as well want to get some great guests on there. But I mean, as well, talking about guests, we've got our first guest today. And he works for us, Maintain, and he's been working for us for 2 months here. So I'd like you all to say hello to Will Crane. There's two Wills here, Will Bower and Will Crane, and that's been kind of interesting, shall we say.
It's been good fun, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been good fun. Imagine us sort of being on site and, you know, explaining there's two Wills. But I think a lot of customers, they can't quite enjoy it, don't they?
They do. They definitely, you know, it's when we've got customers, the Wills are coming to
the Here come the Wills. And we've got a saying as well, where there's a will, there's a way. And where there's two Wills, there's definitely a way. Do you know what I mean? But no, today's podcast, I really want to get Will on and get his head into this podcast and discussion points about vibration analysis. And what we're going to try to do with this podcast is really every single week go into a condition monitoring technique initially and sort of talk about the benefits and, you know, try to give some good case studies, examples, stories about what we've sort of experienced in the industry as well. But today, really, I want to talk about vibration analysis, get into the depths of it a little bit and sort of, you know, we do this every single day, you know, probably predominantly this is really probably, I would say 80% of what we do is probably vibration analysis. It's really highly dominated in terms of the service we provide. And of course, I've recently as well just completed my level 3 course. I'm yet to get the results back from that, you know, as well. I really just want them back now. But, you know, a big respect to Dean Whittle at RMS as well. Really great informative course and, you know, learn a hell of a lot more, which I'd love to get involved and, you know, start implementing back into the work that I do. And we've actually started to do little bits and bobs. And Will's actually really intrigued and we're looking to get him on the level 3 next year. So we do take it very seriously, you know, and I think at Maintain, I think the idea is to keep learning regardless of what you do. And obviously, I understand that these qualifications are great to have, but it's not the end all of your learning process. You know, until you get out into the field, until you start really experiencing, you know, firsthand, like handheld vibration analysis, it's very difficult to learn, isn't it, Will?
Yeah. It's like doing a driving lesson, learning to drive. You don't really start knowing how to drive until you pass, do you?
I know, yeah. It's like, it doesn't come automatic then, does it?
No, and it's when you're out there taking the readings, taking the measurements, seeing the results that you're able to like link up everything that you've learned in the course to kind of go, this is this, and this is what I'm seeing.
Exactly, yeah. No, it's great. Obviously, it's great to learn it in a theory environment, but of course, until you get out into the field, until you can feel the machine, hear the machine, be in the machine's presence, like, this is what I always say as well. It's so important for me. I mean, my philosophy is like, I really honestly believe the person doing the report should be the guy taking the data, personally. Yeah. You know, I've come across, you know, certain other ways of doing it where you'll have a technician sort of taking the data and sending that, you know, information remotely, which, you know, can work to a degree, but without being there next to the machine, there's so much.
Or even if you are doing that, you need to make sure you're capturing as much information about the machine that you're not seeing. How is it driven? What's the drivetrain arrangement?
Yeah, and like, you know, there's so many characteristics around that that you need to be aware of. And there's certain things you may, you know, have missed if you wasn't there, you know,
it so changes like a bit, doesn't it, how you analyze the data, because you're not, if you see a problem while you're taking the measurement there, and then it can adjust how you're then taking additional measurements on the machine.
Yeah,
whereas
agree.
If you're getting data coming back to you from an external source and you're not taking the measurement, you have to be a bit more, your analysis process is slightly different, isn't it, because you haven't got the luxury of, oh, I can just take this additional measurement because I'm not sure what's going on here.
Yeah. So, you know, there's like, I think there's pros and cons of this. And a lot of people, you know, will have their own. There's no right or wrong way of doing it to a degree, of course. So I'm not going to argue that fact. But we personally believe that it is better to, for the guy analysing the data should be the guy collecting it. And it should be a guy at a high level, you know, understanding what it is, because then nothing can be missed that way in terms of understanding the machine characteristics and any issues and problems. And we are engineers as well. We're not just vibration engineers. We're looking at, you know, the feedbacks. We're looking at a lot of different parameters, not just the vibration data when we're around that machine as well. So, Will, what is vibration analysis? How would you describe it, my man?
Wow.
Okay. It's a question.
God, there's a question.
I know, I'm putting him in the hot seat now.
Okay, so I've always... The analogy I always use, especially to like family, you kind of go, what do you do? Because it's a bit, you know, we do a bit of a different thing.
It's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, I kind of look at... I kind of go around as if we're a bit of a doctor. We're a bit like doctors going to the factory. So when you go to your doctor as a normal person, they're checking your blood pressure, you're checking all your different vital signs. We do the same thing for machines.
I love that, yeah. What a great analogy for people that may not understand exactly what we do.
And a lot of the techniques we do can really be applied to that. So you might go and get your temperature checked to the doctor. Well, we do the same thing with thermography.
Yeah.
And vibration analysis is no different to if they're checking the heartbeat or the rhythm of your heart.
Yeah, yeah.
We're checking the exact same thing of the machine. And when that is irregular, we can then apply that to the things that we know to try and get an idea of what the issue is.
Great example for people that may not understand what we do, because obviously it can get complicated, but the actual, you know, process of it is quite simple, really, isn't it? We're looking for vibration signature, and we're looking for any states of change within that vibration over periods of trend history and time to check to see if we can pinpoint or take some analogies out of that data or any defects out of that data that has a rate of change to then indicate there may be a problem with the machine's health. And as well, vibration analysis is very effectively done in three different ways. I like to be able to sort of take a measurement and understand the different ways that we take vibration data. And one being velocity, which is more low frequency events that predominantly are poor running conditions, like misalignment, looseness,
imbalance,
stuff like that. You know, you can genuinely feel these types of vibrations because they're lower frequency stuff. Acceleration, which is higher frequency events. So our ears and our senses will only be able to hear to a certain frequency range. This is where I think vibration analysis really comes into its own, because it can start to identify things that we're not humanly possible to identify. You'll know when your machine's vibrating pretty hectically with an imbalance, because you'll probably be able to feel it.
Yeah.
You know, you may not be able to initially first tell the severity of that until you test it with a vibration meter, but you can pretty much tell there's an issue or problem.
Yeah.
With high frequency events like bearing defects and stuff like that, you know, you're going to really be looking at higher frequency events, that stuff that we can't physically feel or hear until it's really late bearing failure stage mode, really, which at that point is probably way too late. And it may even fail before you even get to that point in time. So this is where I honestly feel vibration analysis is so effective, because it can actually take like almost another sense into the equation where it can start to detect things that we personally can't do on a PPM, or we personally can't do with our own senses themselves. But obviously there needs to be knowledge and theory knowledge of understanding what we're looking at when we take them readings, and understand if there's any anomalies within that data to understand that we need to change the machine or change the bearings, or, you know, maintain any corrective action with that machine or, you know, that asset to ensure it doesn't fail in production and take out a production line, which predominantly can be very damaging for all companies that are producing high volume goods or high quality goods or high, you know, product value goods as well. So vibration analysis for me is so important. And I feel, you know, even right now in the industry, I don't think a high percentage are doing it. What would you say, Will, about, you know, in terms of the response to it right now? And I know we're moving to the future in terms of technology, but are we, as you know, as a culture, ready to start adopting a proactive nature? We're not just coming to vibration analysis, just more of a behavioural thing.
I think it comes down to understanding a lot of it. You know, the companies that understand it and know about it and have people that have already experienced it before are more likely to adopt the technology. But you also have a lot of people as well that may never have even heard of it.
Yeah.
Or when you say to them, oh, are you doing vibration analysis, kind of go freak out, because it sounds quite complicated stuff.
It does.
It's not like a very simple, to the person that doesn't know about it, it can seem quite daunting.
It's its own subject in itself, isn't it? You know, yeah. You've got engineering on the whole, but if you've never experienced, you know, vibration signature, it's a complete whole new subject, isn't it?
So, and I think it can come across as quite difficult. And all we're trying to do is trying to share that it doesn't have to be difficult. It can be easy. We can really implement it, you know. And we've even seen with some of our potential customers, you know, they kind of go in with kind of 2 feet and kind of get really interested, and then they see it and think they can see that it's going to really benefit them.
Yeah,
but then they freak out.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to the implementation stage, you know, you can have a bit of not resistance, but you know, apprehension in terms of getting the ball moving. And I think, you know, sometimes we really try to outline the end goal in terms of where we want to take it. And really want to guide the customer there, really. You know, I think we have to be an extension to what they already have in terms of maintenance. And a lot of places have great maintenance schemes in place, like great PPM schedules, great CMMS systems already in place.
And that's all we want to position ourselves as, as the guide. We're not there to shout about how being the hero or anything like that.
No, we're not the heroes. I mean, at the end of the day, the customer are the heroes. They create the products. They, you know, they do the process of the daily tasks that run the plant. You know, all we're trying to do is create a framework and provide information that they would probably struggle to get on their own quickly, because you know, vibration analysis, you know, the experience that you have to have in this very niche field is not something that everybody has as an engineer. You know, it has to be quite selective, and you have to probably follow a certain career path to get where you need to go in terms of having the knowledge of understanding what a bearing defect looks like using, you know, a very expensive piece of equipment. And equipment is another one as well. You know, you've got a lot of equipment out there that's not cheap. You know,
it's not,
you know, it can be very expensive, but the value it can give back is paramount. But at the same time as well, I've seen companies adopt, you know, in-house vibration analysis technique, which I think can work personally,
it
can only work when the person doing it is getting great support and they're interested in the subject. I mean, how many times I've seen different plants get someone else involved that they're not necessarily loving the vibration analysis or really loves it and is passionate about it. A lot of the time it's done as a task that isn't done with passion, and you've got to love what you're doing to be able to do it, I believe.
Yeah, you know? The support is key, really, 100%. In the whole thing, because you can put someone on a Cat 1 course and they can understand the basics of vibration analysis. But as we said earlier, it's the going out and doing and seeing and gaining that experience. And if you're on your own doing that, it's quite daunting, because you almost want someone on your shoulder to go, I've seen this, I'm applying the knowledge I know from my Cat 1 course. Am I correct? And you kind of want someone to go, yeah, that's right. And that's an instant learning point for them. And that'll stay with you forever then.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, you're right. You need that real mentor, that partnership where you can, you know, really get taught properly on the level of support. You know what I mean? Rather than just being thrown onto a Cat 1 course and say, oh, well, the guy's level 2, he's now ready to
go for it.
And it doesn't work that way, because I can tell you now, you learn, you know, you need to have the theory, but you're not really there until you've had the experience.
No.
And that's why I really like, you know, the British Institute of Non-Destructive Testing as well, because you can't get your qualification until you've actually proven to them guys that you've done in-field experience, which I think is quite important as well, because, you know, you need to have both, really, to be able to hold the qualification in that sense as well, which I think is right, really, because you can't just do an exam and then be expected to be able to do
and
the
I think
job.
Mobius do something similar. They do something like you have to be in the industry X amount of years.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
So I think both of them are doing that and offering that like period. But I think it's once you come out of the course and you've got it, that you need that mentor.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, even if it's from external point of view, but they need to be there all the time.
100%. And that's something that we're looking to do as well in the future. Obviously, we're not quite there yet, but what we want to be able to do is like not just give someone the knowledge to be able to pass an exam.
Yeah.
It's almost to be there as a guide for them.
That's it.
In the future and moving forward, and if there's any issues and problems. And part of the reason why we built a forum as well, which we will be developing over, I mean, this is something long term. You know what I mean?
It's something that grows over time. And,
of course.
You know, we're awfully busy at the moment with lots of different things we're working on. So as we begin to free up, we can then put more content on there.
100%.
And, you know, we developed the forum really as a place that is informal, and anyone can go on and ask and share stories and ask questions. And I've seen this almost like a global mentorship platform.
Yeah, because 100%,
there are definitely industries out there and companies that do have, you know, the analyst on site that's doing all the stuff that has been trained, but they don't have that support structure.
Yeah, I know. I agree.
And they kind of want to be, they want to just be like, look, I've seen this in my data. What do other people think?
Yeah.
And, you know, LinkedIn's great, but it's quite a formal place. And, you know, having like the forum that we've built.
It takes that away, doesn't it, in terms of the fear of getting judged in terms of what your opinion is. Because I understand that can be a potential problem.
Yeah.
Like putting something on there and having the fear that someone may disregard you as an analyst. And this, what we're trying to create is a forum where there isn't any of that. It's purely there to help people. And, you know, you've got to be able to create an environment where people feel comfortable to do that, well, to really get value out of it as well, you know. And we'll be the same. There'll be certain things that we'll come across as well that we may be unsure of.
Well, we had that one at one of the customers where they had the drum. I put that on, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah, you did.
That was out, that was causing a bit of a knock. We'd never seen anything like it before, so we put it on there. You know, we had a few comments, didn't we?
We had a few comments and we had some great suggestions. And, you know, even that added value for us, you know. So, where would you say vibration analysis is applied to be most effective? Where do you say, where the biggest wins with vibration analysis? What's your opinion on the biggest win?
I mean, rotating equipment in general, but nothing too slow speed. Like we know that anything slow speed, we tend to apply ultrasound to.
Yeah.
But, you know, pumps, gearboxes, large drives, where, you know, anything critical, fans, that's where we, you know, see the best kind of results with. That's where I feel that I've always applied it to. Because I want to get a better understanding of the machine that I'm measuring.
Of course, yeah. And I think my experience with vibration analysis really is how effective it is at detecting bearing defects.
Definitely.
And for me, I think, you know, the number one thing that is really going to hurt a machine and cause it to fail is a bearing defect.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like a lot of my sort of previous experience, I'd been quite heavily looking in the velocity spectrum, which is great for the low frequency stuff.
Yeah.
But that's not the stuff that I'm really concerned is going to take my machine out straight away.
Yeah, 100%.
What I want to know is what's in the high frequency stuff, in the envelope, the bearing defect. What is the thing that's going to catch me off guard?
Exactly. And what we've done at Maintain, what I've really been greatly effective at, I believe, in the initial years when I first, you know, bought a Vibe Expert 2, which was not the kit I was using previously in my previous employer, which was a great thing, really, because it allowed me, I had to learn and understand it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can imagine me going on site with one of my first customers and just really taking thousands of readings with different settings and different filtering settings to try to get the best enveloped acceleration reading. And understanding the band filters as well was so important to be able to understand exactly where you're going to be able to find them out of race and inner race defects within your bearing. Because if you leave that band too high, you're going to have too much overall noise. You're not really going to be able to filter in on the defects. Yep. And if you leave it too low, you may actually, if you leave it too narrow, shall I say, that band, you may miss out on, you know, important data before or after that band. So this is where I thrived, I think, because I took thousands of readings on, you know, assets I knew had issues and problems with the ultrasound as well. And we came up with an incredible reading in terms of filtering for envelope reading. And because of that, I've got this box full of bearings I'm actually looking at right now. And it's a big box in it, Will. Will was very surprised when he first come to Maintain, because I kind of give him the tour, which wasn't very big. It was kind of my little office. But he loved it, you know. We're not a massive company. We're not. We're growing. But when he saw the box of bearings, I think his face definitely lightened up. And when I could start to show him the spectral analysis with, you know, these defects on the trend. And it was so clear to see the outer race defects in terms of the outer race of that bearing defect fault frequencies lined up in that spectrum of, you know, harmonics of every single defect on there, whether it be outer race or inner race or a ball spin frequency or a cage frequency, for example. He could see the correlation and the actual damage in the bearing. And that's what the customer, I believe, loves to see.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when you can, for the customer in particular, who doesn't quite understand what's going on. You know, you should try, if you show them a vibration spectrum, it means nothing.
It doesn't, does it?
Not
it
really.
It really doesn't. I mean, to be honest, I think personally what is better to show a customer is ultrasound and hearing it.
Hearing it. You know, we try, if we can hear it when we're there, we'll try to get the customer to come and
listen. Audible is so effective, isn't it?
Definitely.
For people that don't quite understand,
but
you know,
being able to link those up, you know, your vibration analysis, here is a bad one, here is a good one, and here is the bearing
exactly
that came out of it. And they can see the results. They can see
That's it. That's where we've been really effective with the customers that we've got. And we're very appreciative to all the customers that we've got, because I've grown this from the ground up, really. You know, this is something that I've grown up from, you know, having no customers. You know what I mean? And the first year was challenging, you know, but I learned a lot about myself in the industry, and you know, and I'm very grateful for the first initial customers that allowed me to be able to create these case studies.
Yeah.
You know, and it was incredible that when we started getting these bearings down, we started having, you know, the RCA, shall we say, the root cause analysis studies of us understanding why it failed and what patterns we were seeing in the bearings. We could then really start to understand the reason why it failed. And that's where I wanted to take this. I didn't really want it to just be something where we just detect the issue and replace it. I really wanted to get to the root cause and say, look, it is failing because of this reason. Can we do anything better next
time? The root cause, you know, is the key, really, because we can go around and measure lots of different
parameters,
pieces of equipment,
yeah,
and parameters,
yeah,
and we can find a problem and they can change the bearing, but that doesn't mean that that's the root cause. And we've seen it loads of times with fluting in particular. You know, you can find a problem with electrical fluting, whatever.
And this is where we'll go to our, like, story, actually, because what we're going to try to do every single podcast, I mean, Will's going to be in with me for some of these as well. We're going to actually start interviewing some other people in the industry and field via Zoom call, I assume, maybe.
However, we're going to
however
we're going to make it work.
We're going to make it work, whatever we can, obviously, you know, due to the current situation. But we're going to make it work. But what we're going to try to do is give a case study every single time we talk about it, so you guys can understand sort of like the problem, what we did to guide the customer to be able to solve it, and you know, the actual, you know, win and a reliability improvement because of that, which
Definitely.
Is an important thing here, because we can be great and detect the issues, and I think a lot of people shout about that as vibration engineers, but what we don't shout about enough is the actual improvement in terms of the reliability from what was done differently from finding the defect,
yeah,
or the problem. So this particular customer packages up chicken. I can't name any names, pure down to,
yep,
data protection and everything, but they output lots of chicken. You know what I mean?
And any breaded chicken,
yeah,
you see in the supermarket probably comes from these guys.
Yeah, they pump this out crazy. And one of the main processes of this process is compressed air. So this compressed air actually supplies the chillers. So if they lose this compressor...
Well, it's ammonia, isn't it? It's an ammonia compressor.
Yeah.
Which provides their refrigeration for their freezers.
Yeah. So, yeah, great. Cheers, Will, for that added extra information. But if they lose this particular compressor, it will take out the plant, no doubt.
Oh.
We've been told it will completely stop production. So
in any type of industry, especially that's doing frozen food... Your freezers are your most critical.
I'd say,
because
so,
it's your middle point in the production. So you've got your production at the beginning that's making it, you freeze it, and then you've got your packaging at the end.
Which packages
and that's your main bottleneck. You lose your freezer, nothing's moving forward.
Nothing's going out the door as well. So if the customer would lost this particular asset, I think the downtime was something ridiculous, about probably £25,000 per hour, roughly. I think that was kind of what I said. I don't know whether that was true or not, in terms of exact figures, but just give you an idea of production losses there. Which
and you lose all your product that's in your freezer.
Exactly.
As well.
I mean, it's just there's a lot more to it than that as well, you know. And that's just purely from production. We're not talking about the cost of the actual failure, you know. Which and a 300 kilowatt mower, you know, maybe it's probably specialized for the application as well, you know, because it was a special mower, this particular one, for the actual compressor itself. So, you know, it is massively critical, this machine. So we knew that. And obviously when we monitor it, it was a high priority for us to understand the application of it as well. What we found initially is out of race defects in the non-drive end bearing.
Pretty severe ones as well.
Quite severe. And when we come into this customer, it was bad. It was pretty severe. And we see these readings very high up where, you know, probably a lot higher than what we would be comfortable with seeing
Definitely.
In a non-drive end bearing defect.
It's gotten to that point, hasn't it, where it was unpredictable?
Yeah, very high. You know, you're talking probably overall values, probably about 9 Gs on the enveloped acceleration spectra. Acceleration was extremely high as well. And as well, when we're listening to using the ultrasound, we could hear the outer race defect quite clearly. To be honest, you didn't even need the ultrasound gun. No. Did you really?
No.
I think the customer knew as well. But the thing is, because the customer doesn't go in there often, they don't see this as well. And that's what kind of really creates a great element here, because we are the eyes, we are the ears as well, to a degree. So we tested it and we sort of trended it for a few months. We made the call to say to the customer, look, you need to get this out. It needs to be repaired. But before we did that, I've seen this problem before elsewhere. We knew it was inverter driven, and I knew that there potentially could have been an issue with electrical fluting. Because what happens when the inverter switches from AC to DC, it creates this residual current that can sometimes...
It has to discharge,
and that generally can be sort of inherent in the rotor. So it will try to discharge to the lowest path of resistance, and that can sometimes be through the bearing. And it, you know, generally does occur through the non-drive end bearing, and that was where we was getting this problem and issue. On the nameplate, looking at it, it didn't look like to be insulated bearing either. So I was kind of skeptical. So what we're starting to do now is actually test the shaft current using a Fluke scope meter.
Yeah.
And using some, it's like a Morgan brush that it's a tiny little bristles, carbon bristles that you connect to your scope meter. And you actually put that on the shaft and then you can see the discharges in the scope meter in volts.
Yeah.
So we actually identified there was probably about 9 volts discharge, and it was quite erratic as well. You could see it on the scope meter, and you could see it sort of, you could see the discharge building up and discharging, building up and discharging. So we knew inherently there's definitely residual shaft current within that mower. So we obviously spoke to the customer. We actually carried this bearing change out ourselves as well. And it's been done now. It actually was done last week.
Went really well, didn't it?
Went really well. Will's great fitter as well. He used to work at British Sugar, so he's obviously dealt with a lot of probably bigger equipment. So what a great asset. And it was great. It was great fun, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
We had incredible time, didn't we?
It is good.
Took me back to my old fitting days, you know. We had a laugh as well. But when we had a look at the mower, it was quite surprising, really, because the mower...
It's a really interesting design. It had like an open fan, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It sort of sucked the air through, didn't it?
It sucked the air through, which then just caked the bearing in dust.
I know. And do you know what? When we took off the actual shaft, the actual guard, it actually had a grounding ring.
Yeah, it did.
And what we found was the root cause of the failure was that the drive end bearing and the non-drive end bearing
had
been completely over-greased. So... what actually happened was who was servicing the compressors was greasing the motor, and they were just putting way too much in. And, you know, stuff like that is, you know, at the end of the day, we're not here to blame anyone. But what we're here to do is try to understand the reason of failure and try to educate people in terms of understanding what you could be doing is potentially causing more damage than good.
Yeah,
you know, and lubrication is we'll do a separate podcast on the whole thing. It's so important. It's such an important thing that I believe a lot of factories are not implementing in the best practice, which is causing a lot of problems that they may not even be aware of, if you know what I mean. But, I mean, this particular application had a grounding ring on it, and because the grease had actually popped through the end caps, it actually got into the carbon brushes and it wasn't doing anything. And we'll have a case study on this real soon on the website. We're actually putting it together now, and it'll be on LinkedIn as well. And we'll show you the pictures of the actual, you know, application. But what happened was, because of that grease, like completely encapsulating within them brushes, the brushes of the ground ring weren't taking the current away from the rotor, which then the current would then go to the next lowest path of resistance, which was through the non-drive end bearing. We've seen this happen quite a lot, haven't we, Will?
Definitely. It's becoming more commonplace now. More industries are moving towards inverter-driven drives.
Definitely, 100%. And, you know, when we got the motor down with a big hoist, and it was good fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We got it down, and straight away, we could see, especially in the non-drive as well, grease.
Took the end plates off, and the bottom was just
covered.
You could see the soap and the grease had and the oil had separated.
Yeah.
And it was just a pile at the bottom. It was quite a considerable amount.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well, especially with when you've got electrical currents going through the bearing, what can happen is that grease can become very conductive. And what can happen as well, if the grease is... What you can get is something called conductive grease. So what that is actually... Well, it is conductive, so the sparks happen, but less viciously. What you can get, what you can get sometimes is some additives in the grease sometimes can really cause it to become non-conductive. But that's a problem as well, because what can happen is when it builds up the spark, it gets bigger and then it discharges through the race, which causes a pit or that electrical fluid and damage, that EDM damage, what can become very damaging as well. So grease is quite a big, major player in this phenomenon. And when the grease can get energized as well, that can cause that soap, that thickener, and oil to separate as well. So then what you get left with is just deposits in the bearing, which we'd found with this application as well. The grease was completely black and the original grease going in was red. So just to give you an indication of, you know, complete separation, and that grease had been affected. But I honestly believe if it hadn't been over-greased, we wouldn't have seen that issue, because the electrical currents were just obviously running, havoc with that non-drive-end bearing and the drive-end bearing as well, to a degree.
You just have to ask yourself, why, don't you? So the bearing failed. Why? Because it had electrical currents in it. Well, why did it fail? Well, on this application, it had a grounding ring.
Yeah,
but it was full of grease.
Yeah,
so it failed because the ring was full of grease.
But the cause of that was over lubrication. So you've got more than one failure mode here. You've got the over lubrication element. You've got the electrical currents initially as well. And grounding ring's not always the solution, guys. Because if you'd have got to the root cause of why this was happening in terms of the electrical currents, you wouldn't need to put a grounding ring on it.
Yeah,
which meant there was no implication afterwards for it to even fail if it had been over-lubricated in that sense. So you've got to go back to the real root cause as well. But it's not always cost-effective to try to find a solution with the inverter as well, because I've seen applications where we've chased it, we've had a look at different, you know, grounding of that inverter filtering itself and inverter. Filtering as well. And sometimes, you know, you can't even get rid of it. It's a very difficult problem, very costly one. And let's be honest, when you're running a production line that needs that running all the time, they do not have the time to be able to really implement that solution, which is just reality, you know. And a lot of the time, you know, when we do talk about this on LinkedIn and stuff, I do get it. A lot of people do say, oh, well, you should get to the root cause. I understand. I get that. But when you're talking, you know, a compressor mower that is so critical to your plant, they're not going to, you know, spend time, you know, to be able to resolve the solution when it needs to be running. So we got to step back into the real world sometimes, you know. And I feel like, of course, we're always going to try to implement the best practice. We always are, but it's not always the way, is it? Will, you know what I mean? So, you know, looking at the bearing, we're going to cut it open. There's definitely wear in it. Yeah, we spun it. you can hear it when you're spinning it with your hand, which is great. So we're actually going to get that cut open and have a look. We've got pictures of all the grease and everything. And, like, we got the motor back up. We realigned it. And it just purred, didn't it, when we got it back going? It's such a lovely feeling.
It's something, obviously, that we're now doing more often. We're doing more site service stuff, site repair work. And it's having that continuity. You know, we find the problem. We can see it in the vibration data. We have an idea of what it might be. We take it apart. We're able to apply the best bearing practices and lubrication.
But that's why I love doing what we do in terms of actually providing a solution. Because putting them bearings back on site, you know, it has to be done so intricately. You know what I mean? You know, cleanliness, and it's difficult to be able to provide that environment on site. But when, you know, you use the best bearing heaters and you use the best practice, you know, you can tell that, you know, it can be done in a very efficient, good way, but a very high standard way on site as well. And that's what we're trying to implement here. And when we test them out afterwards, we can measure that. Yep. We can measure that quality, you know, and we can measure that quality in terms of the alignment as well. We can measure that with the vibration, and we can give a whole picture to the before, the solution, the problem, and then obviously end results that complement the whole story. So, I mean, the customer here, you know, had this shutdown planned anyway. So, you know, they had a lot of things they needed to do, and it was a part of their, shall we say, they basically do a shutdown once every 6 months, you know, and it's not long at all. You know, you're probably talking 3 or 4 days, you know. So you can imagine that they're running pretty much 24/7 the whole of the rest of that time. So this is such an important shutdown for them
as
well.
Christmas as well.
Of course, yeah, 100%. We all know how it gets with Christmas with food. Everyone wants to eat food at Christmas.
That's it.
But at the same time, what it allowed them to do is to get this done in the production time that was already planned, right? And we was able to really see the practice in terms of what they're doing. And now what we're doing, we're taking taking that lubrication schedule ourselves.
Yep.
And we're using data to understand whether it needs grease or not.
We can do it on condition, can't we?
Yeah, we can. It's called condition-based lubrication. Whereas before, the reason why it failed that method was because there was no metrics behind it. There was no data or information to understand whether it needed grease or not. And when you don't have their metrics behind it, of course, you're going to get to the stage where something's going to happen.
And lack of understanding, because we were very fortunate that when we did this bearing change, we were actually able to speak with the technician
who
lubricated it, and he had no idea.
No, he didn't. You know, fair to him, he was willing to learn. And this is what I love about it as well. He's willing to learn about it as well. So, and of course, whenever we can be vessels for good reliability practice, of course, we're going to be able to do that. But if you're not aware of that, you're not going to do it, are you? So this is where training, understanding how important lubrication is. It's not just a task you can give to someone who's not been trained.
No.
And a lot of the time, that is the way it is, isn't it? Where I've been, a lot of the time, these processes and these tasks are in their priority, low priority tasks, when they should be very high.
Or they have in place a very historic system where it's, we lubricate that 2 shots every time.
Yeah.
3 shots every time.
Which is based on history rather than based on understanding and data. And actually, you know, nowadays we've got the technology to measure this with ultrasound and vibration analysis very effectively, very quickly. So really we need to be in a place where we're using that technology to understand that reliability metric.
You know, schedule of 2 shots, 3 shots, you know, there's lots of like problems and that can
occur. Yeah, I mean, 2 shots, 3, I mean, that doesn't even give an amount in weight, does it? You know, but one grease gun, maybe 5 grams, two shots from another grease gun, maybe 2. So even that as a metric is a wrong way to look at things. But let's be honest, most places that we go, the schedules have 3 shots for, you know, it doesn't even give a measure in terms of weight. And, you know, how many people do actually use grease guns with metric measures?
We've had the same conversation before where you have a bearing, it says it wants this amount of weight of grease every time. How do you know how much grease is in there when you go to it next?
Exactly. So, and what is that measure? Is that from empty or is that from sufficient oil? Is that 30% full? 60% full? Do you know what I mean? Which it probably shouldn't be anyway.
I feel this is another podcast.
100%. We could get really deep into it, and we will, because it's quite, you know,
it's an interesting subject.
Very much so. So, we're at 36 minutes. So we're going to have 2 more subjects, I believe, that are quite important.
Yeah,
by vibration analysis. We're going to try to wrap this up under 45 minutes.
So it's ideal for your journey to work.
Exactly. Usually generally it's about half an hour to an hour. So, it should be in between the midpoints as well. So, guys, if you want any more information on that case study, drop me a message on LinkedIn or me or Will. We'll, you know, share some more information and details. We should have that case study ready up on the website real soon. That's something we really want to shout about, because there's so many different practices in that people can potentially learn from.
We'll put it on the forum as well if people want to check that out.
100%. But bear with us, guys. We are, at the minute, ridiculously busy, and we really want to get all of this out in terms of... this is the first podcast for like probably a month, because we've just been so at it. But we've actually got an opportunity this week where me and Will have a bit of time to do a bit of this. Which is a rarity, of course. Yeah, 100%. So the next conversational point that we want to talk about is wireless solutions and what can be offered in terms of something that can be monitored more regularly or can be monitored more often without us being on site.
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic. So if you're listening to this on LinkedIn and you've picked it up on LinkedIn, we'd love to hear what you guys think on it, because it's one of those things that has always been, I think up until recently, you know, quite out of reach for a lot of our customers.
100%. I think as well now, because technology's moving, of course it is. I mean...
And it moves very quickly.
It does. Electronics are getting cheaper.
Yeah.
Wireless technology is getting better and cheaper. And obviously the better it gets, the cheaper it gets. It's a very weird linear scale, isn't it?
I mean,
it gets better and cheaper.
You think of phones, you know, how far phones have come. Technology in general is a very fast moving industry. And, you know, several years ago, you wanted a wireless solution or typically wireless solutions are probably, I'm not sure of the metrics and how new they are, but from my experience, like I've probably only heard them in the last sort of 4 or 5 years. They've come about more accessible.
Yeah.
But even then, you know, you're talking 30 grand for a system.
That's what I'm saying. So cost wise, you know, you've got some companies that don't even do the handheld vibration analysis of getting someone on site once per month. So then to be able to offer a system that can constantly monitor something, you know, all depends on obviously the criticality of the machine. But I kind of feel like companies start to invest when they have the failures, have the pain impact point.
Yeah.
Ouch. That failed. It cost me this much money. It caused this much stress. It caused this much damage, which it can do.
And I've got my boss on the tail.
Yeah, because it can. Like a critical failure on something that is so critical, that is very big, very costly to be able to replace maintenance-wise.
And it can be really hard to measure. Like we've said you can have a failure that occurs, right, this bearing has failed and it has cost us X amount, let's say 6 grand as a figure.
Yeah.
But that same bearing could also fail and take the shaft out. Then you're suddenly, your failure cost is suddenly, so you know, there's a band to it.
There is a different cost. There's a different way, but as well, that has an impact on lead time. Which is the major one because you take out the shaft and you have to get a machine shaft. You know, you're talking maybe a few days, and a few days could be really damaging. Well, yeah, all depends. Yeah, you're right.
You never know.
We had the same application with one of my previous employers where the same thing happened. It was a fan bearing. Yep. It was a malt plant, and it was a very specialized kiln fan. Bearing went, drive bearing nearest to the fan went. It took out the shaft and they had to get a complete new shaft machined. And it wasn't even that. It was getting a new shaft in the actual fan hub, which was a problem. And that took days.
We used to have someone, I was at British Sugar, where there were these fans and they were extracting out sugar. And if one of the bearings went, the only way they could do it is you'd have to cut the shaft.
I know.
Doxycycline. And it became, you know, in the end, we managed to work around and I think they modified them to allow for easier removal. But even that, it's a challenge in its own right.
I know it is. Yeah, you're right. I mean, just thinking of that is mind blowing as well. Think about the pressure that these guys are under.
Absolutely.
When this is happening. Because, you know, when the line is down, you've got
that is where we can really help, because we can give them their insight that they can understand before it's going to happen.
That's the thing. And it can be done so effectively as well. And that's why I feel like it's my mission. It's my mission to be able to, like, you know, really.
Definitely.
Just give people the peace of mind and the guidance that they can, you know, plant in these ways of maintenance before it causes such a catastrophic event to the actual asset and to the actual production and to the overall process, you know.
And it's coming from our mission. Safety and environmental point of view now as well. You know,
100%.
Environment has become a much bigger topic over the last couple of years than I think it was previously.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, health and safety has always been important.
That's always number one. End of the
so,
day. It's always,
you know,
number
it
one.
Isn't necessarily just about saving the production and the downtime. We have to look at it from an environment and safety point of view.
Of course, safety, environment, and then production, really, in terms of the hierarchy of it all.
But it's great that we can offer that.
Yeah, brilliant. And as well, you know, there's an argument. What is better, handheld or 4.0? And obviously, you know, in industry 4.0 is coming in terms of wireless technology, and online systems are now more accessible, and it is something that we offer as well. I know, and I think my answer to that question, what is better, you know, wireless monitoring that does more or handheld? I don't think either one is better personally. I think they can both be used to advantage.
They both have their application, I think is the right word to use.
100%. I mean, I think you can't put a sensor on absolutely everything in the plant. We're not there yet.
No.
You know, maybe 20 years in the future, it probably will be possible. Looking where technology is going. But right now, it's not. It's just not. Even with the cheaper...
It's not cost effective.
Not really, no. Because even the cheaper sensors, you can get cheaper sensors, but they'll give you less information. They'll probably give you overall values. And that's not going to tell you when your bearing's going to fail.
No.
You know, you need to be able to even with smaller assets that are critical, you still need to understand the information because that criticality is still high, you know.
Absolutely.
But you don't want to be putting an online system on absolutely everything in the plant. So you have to look at it in terms of criticality point of view. You've got to look at your major...
And what's going to add the most value to the customer.
100%.
Like which bits of kit are we going to benefit the most from getting more data, more accurate data?
Yeah.
You know,
and more of it. And that's the thing as well. And as well, you've got to look at the online system you're using, because it's great. It can take 30 readings per day opposed to one every single month. But what is that data giving you? What value is that data giving you? Like, crap data in equals crap information out, right? You've got to be, it's got to be able to give you the same parameters what your handheld can do. And I think we're getting there. Personally, I think I've seen a few systems that offer that functionality. And that is a major player, game player. Because, you know, previously you could get these sensors, but it was the information it provided which wasn't the best. So, you know, for me, that value wasn't quite there, because there's no point in taking loads of data and in telling you certain parameters are not going to tell you when the machine's going to fail.
Yeah, I mean, especially for us, where we kind of pride ourselves in our envelope reading that you've developed.
Yeah, 100%.
That we, you know, really shouts out when we've got the handheld, you know, there's a bearing problem here.
Yeah.
And then we can delve deeper. That's something, like you say, we have been looking at various different players in the wireless world for
We've not committed, have we, due to that reason, really, in terms of understanding what system can give us the same information of what the Vibe Expert can do.
Definitely.
But can do it a hell of a lot more and give us a lot more history.
We know the Vibe Expert is an incredible piece of tool. You know, we use that day in, day out, and it tells us everything we need to. But there are its limitations in that. When you've got an asset that you can't reach or get to, but you want to consistently monitor, your next solution is wireless. But that system or that solution has to do everything that the Vibe Expert can.
Exactly, yeah. Because in my mind, how can you put a system out there that's not going to be able to give you that information? It just doesn't make sense to me in terms of that. So, you know, I think it is 100% needed both ways. And as well, I think being on site, being the eyes and the ears, because there's certain things that will pick up, not just with the vibration analysis. A great example of that, we've got a thermal imaging camera on us as well. We take temperatures, and we've got an ultrasound gun on us as well.
Well, you know, the
them two things are not there when you're taking online data and you're not next to the machine.
The perfect one was when we went to the customer the other day and their DC motor with the fan.
Yeah, perfect example, actually, Will. Yeah, so it was a little little motor gearbox, right? And there was a tiny fan. It was an external fan on this gearbox, because the gearbox is inverter driven. It runs slow speed, so it's not enough cooling on the fan originally. So, but what happened was, I think one of the sensors on top
got knocked
off, and it wasn't even on. And you know,
it was a 3-pin solenoid type plug.
Yeah, it was a lot of 3-pin. But we was obviously doing thermal checks, and it was about 120 degrees. Like, whoa, hang on a minute, what's going on here? This is hot. And then we had a look a little bit closer, and we found the fan wasn't running, and the actual solenoid connector was disconnected. And that there, if that was on an online system, you wouldn't have seen it, unless there was a temperature probe on it, of course, which some online systems do have, which is handy. But, you know, we see that with the camera, and we obviously put the solenoid back on, and we reported it to the customer as well to keep an eye on the temperature, hoping it would go back down. But something like that could have caused failure.
Definitely. And the way that we're looking at the wireless solution moving forward is for our customers that have critical kit that we want to take more measurements on, or assets that are generally unreachable by a handheld.
Yeah, which, you know, we can obviously solve the solution of actually having to fix sensors as well. But it all depends on criticality again. You know, all of this depends on the criticality assessment of the plant and understanding
how it moves. Because if you've got a system that is... the whole structure is rotating, you can't put fixed on, because the cables just get wrapped around it.
Exactly that. This is where wireless is great. And this is where, you know, we've actually offered it to one of our existing customers where, you know, the actual structure moves.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, a wireless solution is the only solution.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, this is the thing as well, you know, we can offer that. There's not an angle that we can't approach this from.
And it's incredible for our marine customers as well.
Yeah.
That are out at sea, and they hear something, they've got a problem. Guys, can you just take a look at this? They don't have to wait till they're docked up. They don't have to wait till we get there. We can just log in. They can see what we're seeing.
And we can talk them through it as well. We can explain to them, and we can really, you know, we can not manipulate, but we can create dashboards where they understand is bad. And that doesn't have to necessarily be what we see, which is going to be a very different thing to the customer. But they can still understand the cost of not doing or taking action as well. So, I think that answers that question for me. But guys, we'd love to hear your input as well and your feedback. Please get in touch with us, through the avenues of LinkedIn. as well. And we we're going to try to get the blog going a little bit. And we really want to be able to have this communication through the forum.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, it's going to be a little bit off that yet. You know, we're going to definitely build it for the new year to have that communication with you guys and maybe have, you know, probably a community like
as more
place
people
in
join,
the forum. Yeah.
As more people join and it becomes more of a family there. And we want people to understand that the forum is going to be, we want to try keep it separate from Maintain because we're not using it from a business avenue.
It's
we
more
want,
of a reliability type.
Yeah, it's a place
community.
You can go. So yeah. Maybe when we put this out, we'll put a little post. There is a thread on there for wireless stuff. We'll put a post on there and just say, what do you guys think of wireless stuff? And people can leave comments if they wish.
Yeah, 100%. And that for us, I think, would be great.
We just like to see what other people's opinion are. That really, you know, just understand what other people think to this, because you can look at it from the point of view, oh my goodness, it's going to take us away from going to site.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, that people may be scared of that, especially people that have operated on the handheld way of their business.
Yeah.
But you've got to innovate. You know, you've got to innovate, because I'm not being funny. Technology's only going to get better.
Absolutely.
So, like, you know, end of the day, I still feel there's always value for someone being there. But at the same time, we need to almost evolve into being a part, you know.
You need to grasp the technology by the horns and make it work.
Exactly. And then not even that. Apply, if there is ways you can apply value to the customer by using this technology, why are you not doing it?
Well, this is it. You know, one of our sort of number one things we work towards is adding the most value to our customers.
As much as we possibly can, yeah. 100%,
and if that means that we lose a day on site because we're able to provide more value to them by putting a wireless system on, so be it.
Exactly that, yeah, and 100%. And you've got to look at it that way. But then as well, you've got to understand that if we did do that, we'd be taking probably, you know, if you're taking
more measurements.
Say like you're taking 4 measurements a day, right? Every single month, you probably take 1 measurement on that one asset. You know, you're taking, like, over the whole month, you know, like 60 times more readings.
Absolutely.
So with that information, it needs to be analysed as well. So potentially even the cost of it, you know, having a look at that, maybe more. Because the value's there as well, isn't it? But obviously it all depends on what parameters they are. And, you know, there's no right or wrong answer for every single asset.
No.
You know what I mean? It all depends on what you're looking at. All depends on the value that's given back. But I think you've got to always measure that cost against the cost of not doing it, which, you know, the cost of failure.
It's that future cost that sometimes is quite difficult to... for folks to get their head.
It's all cost avoidance, isn't it, mate?
Absolutely.
You know, but at the end of the day, when you've been there, you know how, you know.
Oh, you know about
the
it.
Pain, the pain stays, you know, because I've spoke to a lot of my customers as well, and they understand what it feels like as well to be in their position. So,
absolutely.
But guys, yeah, we're going to wrap this one up. I just want to say thank you for Will for coming in on this great discussion. I've really thoroughly enjoyed it, mate.
It's been good fun.
Yeah, and guys, please, you know, let us know your feedback. You know, connect with us on LinkedIn, Will Bauer and Will Crane. And please follow the Maintain LinkedIn page, you know, if you find it, Maintain CM Limited. And yeah, we're always up for a chat. We're always up for discussions. And yeah, as well, we'll be giving you a video real soon, how to sign up to the forum and how to get involved.
And if you want to get to the forum, you just put conditionmonitoring.co.uk.
Yeah. Type that in and it will direct you, and then you can sign up and it will take you through it.
Yeah.
Easy as pie to sit.
And if you
up.
Have any problems, give us a shout, because we're kind of, it's new to us as well. So we're kind of learning it, how to build it. If you want to add different threads, we can add those in. And if you have any ideas for the podcasts.
Yeah. No, we love to talk about
it. I'm really enjoying this. This is my first one. And I'm loving it.
he's getting hooked. He's even forgot we're in here in the studio. But quite fortunately, I've got a little studio myself because I love music production. But yeah, this is probably why you're hearing it in quite a nice quality, which is great. You know, we can offer that as well in terms of a listening experience for you guys. So guys, I want to thank you all very much for tuning in. Stay tuned for next. I'm going to try to do this every week. Don't quote me on that though, because
he will do it every week.
He's going to make sure.
I'm going to make sure.
But we're going to make a little bit of a schedule up, and as well, we're going to get some exciting, great guests on in the near future as well. So guys, thank you very much for listening.